Skid Row is a 49 square block area, 2,000 people living on the sidewalks in tents and boxes.
There's no reason to live without dignity and love. If a person does not feel like their humanness is seen, of course they're gonna hit the pipe again, hit the bottle again. We as musicians have a responsibility to convene spaces of love and fellowship. I found myself as an artist coming into a space that acknowledges the arts and acknowledges human culture as a lifeline and not a commodity.
Hey you, welcome to the Art and Happiness Project, the podcast about the transformative powers of art. I'm Agathe Westad, and in this show, I speak with artists, business leaders, and scientists. We tell moving and inspiring stories on how art and creativity help us find meaning, improve our relationships, increase our well-being, and change the world. Today's episode is about music, specifically about the healing and humanizing powers of classical music. I spoke with Dustin Seo, classically trained cellist and artistic director of Street Symphony, a Los Angeles-based nonprofit that brings classical music to homeless communities in the form of musical events and workshops. But first, let me tell you the story. Street Symphony was founded in 2011 by Vijay Gupta, a highly accomplished and renowned violinist with the Los Angeles Philharmonic. Gupta believed in the act of making and performing music as a deeply spiritual practice, one that had the power to heal audiences and musicians alike. In 2007, Gupta was one of the youngest violinists to join the Los Angeles Philharmonic, but his path in music took an unexpected turn when he met Nathaniel Ayers, a Juilliard School-trained double bassist whose crippling schizophrenia ended his career and left him homeless. If the story sounds familiar to you, it's because actor Jamie Foxx portrayed Ayers in the 2009 movie based on his harrowing life story, The Soloist, along with Robert Downey Jr. Gupta said the following about Ayers. Nathaniel had a more encyclopedic knowledge of music than my professors at Yale. This was his oxygen. This was his survival. A lot of people on Skid Row turned to self-medicating with drugs, but Nathaniel turned to music. After building a relationship and a musical exchange with Ayers, Gupta wanted to do more and bring classical music down from the elite stage of the Disney Hall to Skid Row, one of the largest and most disenfranchised homeless communities in America. So he founded Street Symphony to bridge the gap. I was really fortunate to speak with Dustin about the work of Street Symphony. First, because he played cello for me and that was a real treat. Second, because he has a totally different perspective on the power and mission of classical music outside the concert halls. And third, because his stories of healing and solace from the hard-hit Skid Row community were absolutely heartrending. I won't spoil the rest for you. Let's go. Hi, Dustin.
Hi, Agathe.
Welcome to the Art and Happiness Project. Thank you for speaking with me.
Of course, it's such a pleasure, and I'm really excited to dive into this conversation.
So I wanted to start by talking, obviously, about music. You're a classically trained cellist. Can you play us something?
Yeah, sure. Why don't I just start with something I usually start all of my musical rooms, and I deeply love the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. And he wrote six suites for the solo cello, and one of these movements of the suites is a piece of meditation for me. So I'd like to open with this. It is the Allemande to the first cello suite in G major.
Okay, let's do it. That That was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you so much. It's I think this piece is quite pastoral. For me, it feels like I'm guiding a friend through a garden that I've tended. And I think that a lot of times, because it's classical music, we feel like we have to listen to specific things. But I really think this is just a moment to breathe, you know, something I hold dear to my heart.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a lot about classical music today. And I wanted first to kind of get into the meat of the subject. You're the music program director for Street Symphony. So how about you tell us, first and foremost, what Street Symphony is?
Street Symphony is a nonprofit that shares musical programming in communities that are affected by homelessness and incarceration in Los Angeles County. Specifically, we work with a lot of individuals and communities that are located in Skid Row. Skid Row is a neighborhood in the central part of the city that also has a large population of individuals that are currently sleeping on the streets. So we have a deep relationship with several different service providers and share musical programming in those spaces, as well as work with individual community artists to empower artists that are currently experiencing homelessness or reentry to explore their identity and hearts through music.
Down here, this is where everyone comes, disappears.
Into the despair known as Skid Row. 49 square blocks of downtown Los Angeles. An American encampment of 2,000 homeless like no other. Drug dealers working in the open. The effect on users, stark. Mental illness as rampant as is the trash on the street. In the city of angels, few care to retrieve the discarded.
Wow. So you bring classical music, mostly, right? That's mostly classical music that you guys do.
Definitely as an ensemble in residence, we are all classical musicians, but we do invite other guest artists as well.
Okay. So you bring classical music and sometimes other types of music, like directly to people who are usually, I mean, obviously very disenfranchised in very deep poverty and in pretty dire circumstances, often including addiction, trauma, disease. It's first very beautiful, but it's also to me a very far cry from the idea that we have of classical music, right? As the, you know, something that's associated with wealth and gilded concert halls and, to be honest, you know, older white-haired dudes. and, you know, is that something that's important to you personally to bring the classical music genre to different groups who wouldn't maybe kind of organically have access to it?
Yeah, you know, the concept and culture of classical music is a very entitled and quote-unquote ivory tower community and culture. And, you know, one might not exactly connect classical music to a neighborhood like Skid Row. And yet, fascinating enough, the crown jewel of classical music in Los Angeles is Bunker Hill. This is where the Disney Concert Hall is, the Colburn School. That's where the Music Center is. This is where, you know, world-renowned ensembles perform regularly. And Bunker Hill is only 2 miles away from the heart of Skid Row, just on the hilltop. And to experience that incredible disparity in such a short amount of time and to kind of acknowledge that disparity that's represented in classical music is sometimes hard to face. But the way I've kind of reckoned with my belonging in Skid Row and in the Los Angeles community as a classical cellist, I have trained as a classical cellist, and I find my personal voice as a classical cellist. And my intentions and desires when I'm working with you know, folks from Skid Row through the work of Street Symphony is to show up as who I am. And many of the folks in Skid Row and many of the folks who are practicing artists in Skid Row are just genuinely interested to know who you are and to hear and see who you're, like, what is your soul and what your artistic practice is. And I am so honored to be invited and accepted by a very resilient and loving and artistic community that I've gotten to know in Skid Row.
How, I wonder how that works reciprocally as well. Like, so there's something about exactly what you say, which is the artists who maybe were trained and grew up in a very different environment, taking the steps towards that community, right? But how is it received from the other side? How is that community of homeless people receiving the gift of music? Is that something that they're welcoming? Is that something that they're asking for?
I want to answer this question kind of in like two parts. I think the textbook answer, or like maybe the answer that you might be expecting from someone like me, you know, doing this work, is just a yes. It is received well by the community. Oftentimes, you know, we're able to share music that I just genuinely think is beautiful in a space that perhaps might not have that accessibility to maybe that sort of beauty. I mean, for example, just last week, we did bring a quartet of Philharmonic members to perform a beautiful piece by Robert Schumann, his first string quartet, in several community spaces, including the Midnight Mission and Downtown Women's Center, which are both service provider facilities that provide emergent and program housing. But in those spaces, that Schumann can hold a space of restoration and healing in the sense that it's just really beautiful and can hold a space that a lot of folks are looking for, you know, some kind of relief and respite from their daily lives, you know, struggling with poverty, with addiction, with, you know, the fact that Skid Row is a very dangerous and hard place to be.
Yeah.
So there is that. There is that part of the answer of, I do think that the music we share is really important and has restorative and healing powers. I want to answer the question a little bit deeper and say, what am I receiving when I go to Skid Row? Oftentimes, when we talk about this relationship of how art is affecting communities that are, well, quote unquote, marginalized, how the arts and like culture can help, like, you know, in recovery and reentry, X, Y, and Z, we immediately kind of put this dynamic on a vertical of who are the artists that are helping and who is the community that's receiving and needs the support. And I think, you know, as a young musician first getting involved with this work, that definitely was the mindset of, I feel like I have a gift to give and there is a community that needs to receive it. But I want to flip your question over on its head, because once I began becoming part of the Skid Row community and getting to know the community and the people that built the artistic space there, I was flipped upside down. I found myself receiving the healing, and I found myself to receive this kind of incredible invitation to join in fellowship. Skid Row, of course, is a community that is defined by its deficiencies, defined by the tragedy and the hardships that our society supports. That is definitely true. And it's also important to name that Skid Row is the epicenter for recovery and redemption in all of America. More people go to Skid Row to pick themselves up. More people go to Skid Row to find their new start, to reconnect with their heart, to fight addiction, to overcome mental illnesses, to find re-entry into our society after decades of incarceration. And I found myself as an artist coming into a space that acknowledges the arts and acknowledges human culture as a lifeline and not a commodity.
It's interesting because I think that some people might, and I like to play the devil's advocate a little bit in this podcast, but some people might think that music is completely anecdotal in the context of alleviating misery and poverty and tragedy, addiction, homelessness, and that obviously there's so many kind of structural issues that lead to those problems even being there in the first place, that, you know, art is really like if that's kind of icing on top of the cake. What do you think that music brings in that context?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, on paper, you're absolutely right. The devil's advocate is absolutely there. What are the metrical outcomes of sharing music in a space like Skid Row? You know, oftentimes as when I'm in conversations about Street Symphony and the work we do, a lot of people ask, well, how many people did you save? Like, how many people are housed because of the work you do? How many meals were being served because of your programming? And the straight up answer to that is none. We are not a service provider organization. We are also not a justice organization. We are 100% a music organization committed to sharing music as a way to convene community and as a catalyst for human connection. music and art has an incredibly important part of recovery and redemption, because it's the glue that brings us together as people. As an anecdote, I want to share a little bit about one of the programs that we offer in at Street Symphony, and it's a program called Music for Change, which is a weekly process group where one or two musicians come into the Weingart Center Association that specializes in housing for folks who are currently in reentry from long-term incarceration from the California State Prison. So many of the folks that are currently in our cohort of Music for Change are folks who have experienced incarceration for anywhere between 15 to 35 years, are currently on parole during their reentry, and are constantly evaluated and checked in by parole officers as well as their caseworkers. We have this program once a week, every Wednesday morning at 8:30, and there is no curriculum. It's just a space where oftentimes myself goes in to play some solo Bach, and the 75-minute process group usually equates to around 20 minutes of playing, and the rest of the time is focused around just conversations. And we usually have a regular cohort of anywhere between 5 to 10 people, and many of these folks are on their track to reentry. We've been doing this program for now 3 to 4 years, and many folks have now successfully completed their parole, are currently in sustainable housing, continue to have a relationship with us, are artists themselves, and are productive members of society. There's also many folks that we've had the deep and relational connection with in this space that we've lost. And I've had the hardship of getting to know someone and becoming their friend, only to find out 2 weeks later that they died from a drug overdose. The work is not about what quote unquote success is. The work is about the relationship and the intention to share dignity. Many folks who are currently in recovery are in reentry, a lot of these folks have had everything stripped away from them, including just human relationship. And my honest belief is that as an artist, we have the divine gift to convene safe spaces where we can just see each other eye to eye. I can play the Allemande to the first suite by Johann Sebastian Bach. And it could be as surface level as, hey, let's just sit here for 2 minutes, take a breather. This is how I breathe, and have that conversation. We can also talk about how Johann Sebastian Bach wrote these solo pieces, both for the violin and the cello, shortly after he lost his first wife. And these pieces are his elegy, his remembrance of his past wife. And so we have all these layers to what the music means to myself, to the composer, to the people in the room. And I do genuinely believe that there's incredible importance to sharing a space of dignity and having that conversation to see each other's hearts.
In general, what do you think it is specifically about music? Because, you know, there's arts program of all kinds, of course. To me, music is something that's very, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's completely unavoidable, right? So it's, if anything, the most accessible art form. What is it about music to you and to Street Symphony that helps in that special way?
I'm sure you get a completely different answer from a music therapist or, someone that's maybe perhaps more interested in like the science behind music. But for me, it really literally just means, or for me, what music does, and I guess art more broadly does, is puts us in the same space. we all get to experience the physical vibrations together. And there's something about that kind of helps us put our guards down. You know, we're no longer different from each other. We are experiencing, at least in this moment, the same sound waves, the same artistic work. And, you know, from an aural perspective, being able to be in touch with those senses as a performer, I never feel like I'm doing it by myself. You know, music can't happen without an audience. Oftentimes, particularly in many institutional classical music settings, the performer is a spectacle. You know, the performer does the thing, makes the music, and people digest it and people consume it. I don't feel that when I'm in the seventh floor of the Weingart Center Association playing solo Bach for a group of folks who are currently in reentry. I feel every single person there present and actively contributing to the music making. We get to really sit into that specifically because we have the opportunity to share in conversation, share in fellowship after the music. And to me, it opens so many different doors that we can't open with, let's say, traditional clinical tactics. I don't consider myself a clinician. I'm not a caseworker that's specifically working in recovery and reentry. But I have many clinicians and caseworkers come to me afterwards saying, hey, after your programming, that's when people line up in front of the counselor's door because it's unlocked something. It's unlocked a moment of vulnerability that we can't do when we're sitting in front of a client with all of our papers, trying to get every single check mark for their parole program.
Right.
And whether that happens specifically through the music making or just acknowledgement of all of our hearts and beings as person, like we're listening when we get to convene a room with music.
That's really fascinating. You're speaking about collaborations, and another part of your programs that I thought was very interesting was the one with women, women of Skid Row, because, I mean, I can't, being a woman, I cannot imagine the hardship of being a homeless person, full stop, but I think a homeless woman, the level of danger and vulnerability that comes with that strikes me as extraordinary, really. And so there is a program between Street Symphony and the Downtown Women's Center. Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of specifically what is done for those women and within that program to help them?
So I got you kind of like caught the next step of what I was sharing. Street Symphony also has a couple programs that are interactive and collaborative in nature with the participants in the music making process. And one of our programs that we share is a program called Women's Voices, which is hosted in collaboration with the Downtown Women's Center. Before I jump directly into that, I do want to mention what you were talking about in terms of Skid Row as a hostile space for many women who are experiencing homelessness. There are many of the spaces that are the service provider spaces in Skid Row are very men-centric, particularly because a lot of the population of folks who are entering homelessness from incarceration, there are more men. But it is a myth to say that there are not that many women that are experiencing homelessness. And unfortunately, many women avoid Skid Row and the services in Skid Row because of the hostility towards women and other folks who are not men. Downtown Women's Center is really a haven in the heart of Skid Row. This is a beautiful space that is operated from a trauma-informed curriculum and program, and specifically work with many women who have experienced domestic violence and may have resulted in homelessness because of unfortunate domestic violence situations. This program, Women's Voices, is a 12-week program where we work with a specific cohort of women at Downtown Women's Center to in a songwriting workshop. Oftentimes we bring in teaching artists from the Master Chorale, the Los Angeles Master Chorale. These are professional singers to guide members of the Downtown Women's Center community in creating an original song. And through this process over the 12 weeks, the women work on lyric writing and explore different art forms. Either study paintings or poems or listen to different music to inspire lyrics that they co-write together, and then enter the writing process where women are taught specific chord changes and basic musical understanding to create the soundscape that accompanies the lyrics. And at the end of the program, their song is then performed professionally by members of the Los Angeles Massacre Chorale. And, you know, this process is very beautiful. We were, you know, we had our inaugural program last year, and the woman created such a beautiful piece. But beyond all of that, the intention of that programming is to build a tighter and more trusting community within Downtown Women's Center. Through this process, many folks who normally don't have relationships with each other were able to, you know, experience the process of music making, experience what it felt like to share some of the most vulnerable parts of their hearts to create lyrics that are deeply meaningful to the community at large. And there is a sense of kind of camaraderie and like fellowship. And when you co-create something, you know, you co-create these lyrics that speak to every single person's heart.
Can we listen to that song that you referred to, that you referred to like a river, right?
Yes. The song is called Flow Like a River.
Flow Like a River. It's beautiful. Let's listen to it. I'll stop there, but wow, it's it gives me chills actually. This one, I gotta say, it's really beautiful. It's really beautiful, and also the lyrics. When I listen to those lyrics, there's also solace in the self-expression that gives. That maybe, I don't know, it's specifically to writing the lyrics of a song as opposed to just playing an instrument. But there is something here. It's really striking to me what they're talking about.
I want to thank you, Aga, for sharing this music. And I want to thank everyone that's listening to this podcast for listening to the music, because I think this is precisely what I was talking about in terms of what it means to share dignity. There is a visceral action of writing lyrics that represent a community, and for folks who are not part of the community to listen to it authentically. I think that that's the key to dignity, and that's the key to why I think the work at Street Symphony is so important, is that we share a moment to listen to each other. I get to play, when I am the performer, I get to share what my heart is expressing through my cello playing, and I am given the dignity of the folks who are listening to me. And with that comes the exchange of me listening. I have now the opportunity to listen to a community that perhaps is not often listened to. And I think you're precisely right. Specifically in the Downtown Women's Center program, the lyric writing offers that opportunity for folks to say something, and say something completely knowing that the people listening are authentically listening and receiving their hearts.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And as you say this, you know, I can't help thinking, you know, about those women and the fact that no music, like you said earlier, music is not going to pull, you know, come on down on them and pull them out of homelessness and, you know, give them money and heal their wounds. But as this is their daily situation, are their day better with music than without? And the answer to that's probably yes, right? That's probably what we're talking about here, is how do you involve, how do you improve the daily life?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to quote one of my mentors. Her name is Georgia Berkovich. She's the director of public affairs at the Midnight Mission and one of our closest partners. She always says, when you give someone dignity, that's when they'll say yes. Here at the Mission, we have beds, we have food, we have shelter, we have all the things, we have 12-step programming, we have opportunities to, and the community to help support recovery. And, you know, we have the pathways for education and for folks to get sustainable housing. Everything is here. But without dignity, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if an individual, if a person does not feel like their humanness is seen, then why the hell not would they hit? Of course they're going to hit the pipe again. Of course mm-hmm. they're going to hit the bottle again. There's no reason to live without dignity and love. And all the things that I think drive what I think the broader society thinks of in terms of recovery and with and solving the homelessness crisis, it's all conceived through metrics. It's like, oh, how many people are homeless in Los Angeles? How many units of affordable housing do we need for that? What's the budget for that? How are we going to get there? And of course, all those things are incredibly important, incredibly important. But the person who is sleeping on the street with their heart, with their head on the hard cement, that person is a story. That person has a heart and a soul. And we cannot relegate individuals to numbers. We really can't do that. That, I think, is that's when it's over. And I do deeply believe that it's through the arts, it's through culture and humanity that we're able to see beyond all of that and see the person who is behind all of those isms, and acknowledge that we're also there, and this work needs to be done together.
Thank you so much, Justin. As you're you're now becoming also more, I think, moved, maybe as I am also by this, I wanted to ask you kind of for yourself. I saw one of the videos on the Street Symphony website of an artist. I think, I can't remember what it was. I think maybe a violinist, who was saying that to him, it moves him to give their art to someone for whom it actually makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that yourself?
It does mean something when I know my music changes lives and I know that my music is received. As a classically trained musician and as a, you know, when I was in my studies and in my undergrad as a music student, I found myself incredibly burned out and deprived because I was told, or I am told by everyone, that what I do is incredibly important, that music changes lives, music heals, music is the thing that gives you the tingles, and all of these things are what we're striving for as artists. And yet, as a young musician, I found myself constantly pitted against my peers. You know, it was like, who's going to win that audition? Who's going to get that job? How excellent can you play? How many notes did you play in tune? How many, how excellent is your bow control? Everything became metrics, and I felt incredibly burnt out by this. And that, I think a lot of young musicians now are finding it's so challenging to reconnect with the reason we're doing this. And the reason we're doing this is because we love it. I love playing the cello. It's my food. It's what grounds me. And I want to share my playing from that perspective, not the perspective of, is this playing good enough for me to get a job?
I think what you're saying also is, if I'm hearing it right, is that there is so much more to do for a musician mm-hmm. than going through the classical system. Not that there's actually maybe in the end anything wrong with it. We do need, mm-hmm. People on the stage, and I love going to the opera and whatever, but like, everyone, the 93% that don't make it on the stage, there is a space for them. And it's, as far as the classical music world goes, there's more opportunities to make a difference on and off the stage.
Absolutely. I have a very, very, very close mentor of mine. I'll call him D today. D is an individual who I met at the Weingarten Association. He was currently on parole from his life sentence. He was released early from his life sentence, has served 30 years in California State Prison. And D has become one of my most valuable friends and mentors. And something D always tells me is that we as musicians have a divine responsibility to convene spaces of love and fellowship. We are, and he, of course, you know, he's deeply religious. He found his recovery and reentry through his faith, and always shares that we need more artists in this world. We need more artists to convene spaces where we can see each other eye to eye. We need more artists to hold spaces where dissent is okay. We need more artists to remind all of us that we are all the same. And I genuinely agree with what you're saying, Agat, that we need more young artists. We need more young musicians. I feel so like it breaks my heart when I see all my peers who are such talented and beautiful souls find like a wall, because we are all conditioned to do one specific thing as a classical musician. We have to get that orchestra job. We have to get a, you know, adjunct professor position or something. We have to like play in a chamber music ensemble, and it's suffocating for us and doesn't give us the opportunity to realize what D is talking about. We do have a responsibility to our society to share our art.
I have one last question, and it's a one word answer. And you get to think about it, but not too long. So what is art for?
Man, the first word that came to my mind was happiness. And I can't do that because that's what your podcast is called.
Well, you proved my point.
No, I think art is for community.
Thank you so much, Dustin.
All right. Thank you so much, Agat.
That's it, guys. Thank you for listening. I hope that this moved you as it did me. As a small announcement, the Art and Happiness Project is now a bi-weekly issue, as I wanted to keep bringing you the high-quality content, and that's just the most sustainable way of doing that. So I'll see you in 2 weeks from now. And remember to give us a rating if you like the show. Bye-bye.